Hi, this is Kathy. I'll be reading the Brockton Enterprise for Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. Brockton House Fire Kills One. One person was found dead in a Brockton home after an early morning fire Saturday. The Brockton Fire Department received a report of a building fire at around 12:30 a.m. Saturday, April 4th at 80 Glendale Avenue, according to a post on the department's Facebook page. Crews arrived to find heavy fire showing on the second floor, according to the post. As crews deployed hose lines and worked to extinguish the fire, they discovered heavy fire engulfing the entire second floor, including the hallway and bedrooms, the post said. The victim had succumbed to thermal injuries, the fire department said in the post. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. Why Abington Health Board wants you to spot the tick nymphs on muffin. Can you spot a nymph stage tick on a muffin? The Abington Board of Health is reminding the community of just how small ticks in their nymph stage can be using training images from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showing a poppy seed muffin with a few ticks in it. They posted the images on Facebook March 25th. Muffin lovers can rest easy, however, as it's not common to find ticks in food. They were placed there, said Christopher Schultz, health agent at the Abington Health Department. That muffin is just used for an example of how small a nymph tick can be. With the nymphs, they're very, very small, he said. They can easily be mistaken for a mole or a fleck of dirt. Schultz said tick encounters tend to peak in the warmer months due to increased outdoor activities, but remain possible throughout the year. Check after any outdoor activities to use EPA-approved bug spray, treat your clothing, and wear long sleeves and pants when you're in the woods, he said. The most important thing for people to realize is that the season is almost year-round. You can pick up them up in the fall, the early spring, and even in the winter. Ticks are typically known for carrying Lyme disease, Schultz said, but another tick-borne illness is on the rise in the area. Everybody's familiar with Lyme disease, which is endemic to this area, but there is now an increase in Alpha-Gal syndrome, which people probably heard of as a meat allergy, he said. People can develop life-threatening allergies not only to meat products, but beauty products and certain medications. There's been quite a few cases on the Cape and the island, so it is a concern for this area. Here's a look at some other diseases ticks can carry in the United States, according to the CDC. Anaplasmosis, babesiosis, Bourbon virus, Colorado tick fever, hard tick relapsing fever, Heartland virus, Lyme disease, Powassan virus, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, soft tick relapsing fever, Starry, tularemia. Here's some guidance from the CDC on preventing tick bites. Know where to expect ticks. Ticks live in grassy, brushy, or wooded areas, or even on animals. Spend time outside walking your dog, camping, gardening, or hunting could bring you in close contact with ticks. Many people get ticks in their own yard or neighborhood. Treat clothing and gear with products containing a 0.5% permethrin. Permethrin can be used to treat boots, clothing, camping gear, and remain protective through several washings. Alternatively, you can buy permethrin-treated clothing and gear. Avoid contact with ticks. Avoid wooded and brushy areas with high grass and leaf litter. Walk in the center of trails. Use Environmental Protection Agency, EPA registered insect repellents containing DEET, picaridin, IR3535, oil of lemon eucalyptus, paramethane diol, or 2-undecanone. EPA's helpful search tool can help you find the product that best suits your needs. Always follow the product instructions. Do not use products containing OLE or PMD on children under 3 years old. When used as directed, EPA-registered insect repellents are proven safe and effective even for pregnant and breastfeeding women. If you are using sunscreen, apply sunscreen first and insect repellent second. Erie Eats. New pub taps into Bridgewater lore with classic New England menu. Don't let the name scare you. The Bridgewater Triangle Pub is officially open, and unlike the actual Bridgewater Triangle, you'll know exactly what to expect when you walk inside. The neighborhood pub-style joint is themed after the infamous triangle, but its menu is rooted in classic New England Americanism. There's elevated pub fare like popcorn chicken and truffle fries, but there are also entree mainstays like steak tips, meatloaf, or chicken a la vodka. The building is over 100 years old, and adding to the eeriness of the restaurant's theme is rumored to have been a morgue ages and ages ago, at least according to 30-year-old owner Jake Barbati. The pub opened Sunday, February 1st, and before the space was occupied by the now-closed Mexican restaurant Casa Agave. Barbati was part of that ownership group too, but when the other owners wanted to retire and move to Florida, he saw a chance to transform the Mexican spot to something he felt could be more successful in Bridgewater Center. "I wasn't ready to give up on it yet, and because Casa Agave wasn't the vision I saw for this place," he said, "we're going to give it another couple years and see what we can turn it into." The branding is strong at Bridgewater Triangle Pub. Two massive signs beckon patrons inside, park in the rear, by the way. There are all sorts of photos and framed images of sightings from inside the triangle, and there are signs scattered around the bar that say things like "recent alien abductions in this area." There's a patio outside that will soon be home to a hanging Sasquatch sign in its center. When the weather warms up, Barbati hopes to host some musical shows out there too. Right now, the pub does acoustic entertainment every Saturday, but Barbati has plans to spice it up. During the Casa Agave days, he had lights and speakers installed that would transform the space into something clubby every other Saturday night for the Bridgewater State University students. He's held off on continuing the tradition while the pub remained in its fledgling stages, but the aim is to have those nights back in the regular calendar as quickly as possible. The Bridgewater Triangle's three most extreme points stretch from Rehoboth over to Abington and down to Freetown, leaving places like Taunton, Brockton, Raynham, Berkeley, Dighton, Easton, Norton, Mansfield, and the Bridgewaters well inside it. It is a place of great suspense and unease, home to many a ghost story and many an unseemly sighting. The Bridgewater Triangle is known for its unsubstantiated mystery. Its darkness, though often unconfirmed and rooted in hearsay, is ubiquitously agreed upon to exist. And thus, its supernatural mystery and creepy allure boosted it into the national spotlight. It's a mecca for those fascinated by the supernatural and the subject of many documentaries and television specials. And like so many who grew up in the Triangle, Barbati isn't without some sightings of his own. Back when he was a kid, Barbati was riding dirt bikes with a friend from Bridgewater Center back to where they lived over by the Nip. "The lights were randomly flickering one night, so we were just pedaling so fast," he said. As the two boys got closer and closer to their homes, the built-up feel of Bridgewater Center fell away into the woodsy nightscape beyond, but the flickering of the lights wouldn't cease. It was then that Barbati recalled looking over to the side of the road. What he saw, he still hasn't forgotten. "It was almost like a spider monkey thing that was running along the side of the road with us," he said. "The way it was moving, though, it was going faster than it looked like it was doing. We both saw it and looked at each other," Barbati said. "I slept at his house because I was like, I'm not going back out there." Barbati grew up seeing Black Hawk helicopters flying over the swamp. Fog would come in and immediately dissipate. The temperature would jump around. There'd be unexplainable shadows that disappear the moment you gave them a second look. "The way things move, shadows, sounds, it's just weird stuff," he said. The Bridgewater Triangle Pub is located at 14 Summer Street in Bridgewater. Its kitchen is open from 4:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, noon to 9 p.m. on Saturdays, and noon to 8 p.m. on Sundays. The bar, meanwhile, is open until 10 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday, until 11 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays, and 9 p.m. on Sundays. The whole joint is closed on Mondays. Lost dog reunited after brutal kicking. After a traumatic incident in March, an owner has been reunited with her lost dog. Naomi Nunez of Taunton was walking in Dorchester around Dudley Street on March 18th with her two dogs, Lexi and Biscuit, when she said she crossed paths with a man who kicked Biscuit into the road. "They weren't barking, didn't even approach the guy, nothing," she told the Enterprise. "As soon as Biscuit was going to pass his foot, the guy just picked up his foot and kicked him. We were in the middle of the sidewalk," she said. "He launched Biscuit to where cars park on the side of the road." Nunez said afterward, Biscuit ran off into traffic and veered the direction of her mother's home where they were staying at the time of the incident. I tried to run after him so fast, and when I got there, I couldn't find him, she said. I don't know what direction he went in. Nunez said she reported Biscuit missing to the police and posted online about it, and someone reached out to her about finding him days later. A woman called me and said, hey, I think I have your dog. She told me she was by the area where he was last seen. She calls me instantly. She shows me, and I start crying. I'm like, that's Biscuit. Nunez said once she lost sight of Biscuit on the day of the incident, she returned to the scene where the police had arrived. I went back to where the incident happened, and the guy that initially kicked him was being questioned by police, she said. The suspect told police he had kicked the dog according to a police report from the incident, and that afterward he was attacked by five males that appeared to be in their 20s. The suspect was charged with animal cruelty. Nunez said she took Lexi with her to go meet Biscuit, and he was overjoyed to be reunited with his family. He was going crazy, she said, happy to see his sister, happy to see me, just sniffing everywhere. She was sniffing with him, playing with him, like, wow, you're really here. After reuniting with Biscuit, Nunez said she took him to the vet to ensure that he was healthy and to determine whether he had any injuries. They did x-rays. No broken or fractured bones, which is great, she said. They just sent me home with certain foods and a little bit of medication because he did have, like, diarrhea coming back home, and the doctors think it was because he picked up something from days that he was on the street. Nunez said, it's a relief to have Biscuit back home safe. I feel so happy I feel whole again, she said. Lexi wasn't eating, she wasn't using the bathroom, she didn't want to do anything, she was depressed. When we got him back, it was like everything's back to normal, she added. These two were my first babies. I've had them since they were out of the litter together, and they've been inseparable ever since. Raynham Police. Officers use taser on woman armed with knife. The Raynham Police Department is commending two of its officers for their response during an incident involving an armed suspect. On Thursday, April 2nd, at around 8:16 p.m., Officer Brian Silva and Sergeant Frank Pacheco responded to 130 Briarcliff Road for a well-being check, according to a written statement from the department Friday. Upon arrival, officers were met outside the apartment by a 26-year-old man who was suffering from non-life-threatening slash wounds, the police said. Police learned that the man had been slashed by his roommate, who appeared to be under the influence of drugs. Officers then entered the apartment and found the suspect, a 26-year-old Hanover woman, brandishing a knife, police said. Sergeant Pacheco issued several verbal commands for the woman to drop the knife, which he could see was still in her hand. Despite numerous commands, the woman advanced toward officers with the knife still in hand, according to the police. Officers attempted to create distance while continuing to urge her to drop the knife. Officer Silva then drew his taser. When the woman continued advancing toward officers, refusing to comply with commands and coming within arm's reach, Officer Silva deployed his taser, police said. After the taser was deployed, officers were able to safely handcuff the suspect, police said. Police said the victim was transported to Boston Medical Center South in Brockton with non-life-threatening injuries, and the suspect was transported to a hospital for evaluation. Incidents involving a weapon can escalate very quickly and pose a serious threat to officers and others nearby, said Raynham Police Chief David LaPlante in a prepared statement. Sergeant Pacheco and Officer Silva gave clear commands and worked to create distance, and Officer Silva used his taser when the suspect continued advancing toward them. Their actions and restraint brought a very dangerous situation under control and allowed them to resolve the situation without further injury. The suspect is expected to be summoned to Taunton District Court, charged with assault and battery causing serious bodily injury. Tesla sits on record number of unsold EVs. Carmaker slashes price for some models in China. Tesla produced 50,363 more electric vehicles than it was able to sell in the first 3 months of 2026, even with a slight uptick in EV interest becoming apparent amid rising gas prices. The nation's biggest electric car seller reported production of 408,386 cars globally in the first 3 months of 2026, according to an April report released by the company. However, the company said it was only able to sell 358,023 of those cars in the first 3 months of 2026. In South Korea, Tesla saw its car registrations rise 330% to 11,134 vehicles in March from a year earlier, market researcher Kara Hsu said April 6. Tesla has cut prices for some of its Model Y and Model 3 electric vehicles made in China, sparking price competition among EV makers in Korea. But throughout 2025, Tesla said it produced 1,654,667 EVs and sold 1,636,129, a gap of 18,538 units for the past year. The delta between Tesla's production and sales levels is much higher than the 16,131 vehicle gap the company reported in the fourth quarter of 2025, when Tesla said it produced 434,358 electric cars and sold 418,227. Tesla sold 589,160 cars in the United States in 2025, down 7% from the 633,762 vehicles it sold domestically in 2024. The drop occurred despite the fact that overall EV sales accounted for represented 9.6% of U.S. auto sales in 2025, which is only a 0.6% decrease from 2024 levels, according to the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Tesla attributed the challenges it faced in the U.S. market in 2025 to near-term uncertainty from shifting trade, tariff, and fiscal policy in a presentation to investors after the third quarter of 2025. Industry analysts also noted the impact of Tesla's CEO Elon Musk's work with President Donald Trump and conservative political stances on the sales performance of the company's cars. The company is also facing increased competitors from other manufacturers who are debuting new models, even as some automakers are pulling back to recent dips in EV demand and the end of federal support for the technology. Bannon's contempt conviction revisited. Supreme Court decision clears case for dismissal. The Supreme Court on April 6 paved the way for the Trump administration to wipe out longtime Trump ally Steve Bannon's contempt of Congress conviction. At the request of the Justice Department, the court effectively erased lower court rulings upholding the conviction and sent the case back to district court, where the department has asked for the case to be dismissed. In a brief unsigned order, the Supreme Court said it was sending the case back down for further consideration in light of the pending motion to dismiss the indictment. Bannon, now a host of a popular Make America Great Again podcast, was convicted in 2022 for defying a subpoena from the House committee that was investigating the Capitol attack on January 6, 2021. He has already served his four-month prison sentence after the Supreme Court in 2024 rejected his bid to remain free while he appealed. But Bannon continued to dispute the conviction, and after Donald Trump became president, the Justice Department stopped defending it. It's not uncommon for the Supreme Court to drop a case when that happens. The Trump administration told the Supreme Court that dismissal of this criminal case is in the interests of justice. Trump has criticized the prosecution of Bannon and other allies as politically motivated. He has pardoned approximately 1,600 people for charges related to the January 6th attack. In 2022, a jury found Bannon guilty of contempt of Congress because he refused to comply with a congressional subpoena. Lawmakers had sought to question Bannon, a political strategist for Trump who pushed him to aggressively embrace populism during the 2016 campaign, partly because he told associates from China on October 31, 2020, that Trump would falsely declare victory even if he lost the election, saying it would be a firestorm. On his podcast, Bannon said former Vice President Mike Pence spit the bit, which meant he was no longer supporting Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election. The House committee described the comment as amplifying the pressure on Pence. Bannon called Trump at least twice on January 5, 2021, and predicted on a right-wing talk show that all hell is going to break loose tomorrow. The former advisor said he was relying on his lawyer's advice not to respond to the subpoena from the congressional committee investigating the attack on the Capitol until another issue was resolved. Bannon believed Trump could protect him from testifying by invoking executive privilege, which allows presidents to keep some executive branch discussions confidential. Because he was acting in good faith, Bannon argued, he did not cross the criminal line of willfully failing to respond. Bannon also questioned the validity of the subpoena. However, House lawyers argued successfully that Bannon had thumbed his nose at the committee and ignored the subpoena. Trump has pardoned Bannon before, as he was awaiting trial in New York for a different case, fraud charges tied to a border wall fundraising effort. Bannon was one of four people accused in 2020 of defrauding hundreds of thousands of donors in the We Build the Wall GoFundMe crowdfunding campaign to finance one of Trump's signature goals. Trump issued that pardon at the end of his first term as president. Guthrie returns to today. Search for mom continues. TV journalist Savannah Guthrie is back on the Today Show, making her return to NBC Morning Show on April 6th after being absent for more than 2 months amid the disappearance of her 84-year-old mother, Nancy Guthrie. Surrounded by viewers wearing yellow ribbon stickers in honor of her mom and fans holding Welcome Back Savannah signs, Guthrie read the morning's biggest headlines. "It is good to be home," she went on to tell co-anchor Craig Melvin, who said, "It's good to have you back at home." "Well, here we go. Ready or not, let's do the news," Guthrie added with a smile, donning a yellow dress for the occasion. At the 7:30 a.m. hour, the co-anchors, joined by Carson Daly and Al Roker, took a look at the four dozen or so viewers there to support Guthrie. "I've really been feeling the love so much. Thank you," she said. About an hour later, Guthrie, joined by her colleagues, stepped outside and greeted her supporters. Craig Melvin remarked that it is a special Monday morning because we're welcoming back our North Star. Guthrie then walked out and waved to the crowd while locking arms with Jenna Bush Hager. The pair could be seen sharing a long hug before stepping outside. "These signs are so beautiful and emotional," Guthrie said while standing in the plaza. "You guys have been so beautiful. I've received so many letters, so much kindness to me and my whole family. We feel it. We feel your prayers. So thank you so much." Guthrie's mother, Nancy Guthrie, has not been found. She was reported missing from her home in Arizona on February 1st. Authorities in Arizona, who have been searching for the 84-year-old for more than 2 months, have said they believe she was taken from her home against her will. In February, the FBI released images showing a masked suspect at Guthrie's front door before she disappeared, but the individual in the images has not been identified. Savannah Guthrie stepped back from the Today Show and NBC's Olympics coverage amid the search. A day prior to her Today return, Guthrie delivered an Easter Sunday message during Good Shepherd's New York's April 5th digital gathering. She reflected on experiencing the grievous and uniquely cruel injury of not knowing, of uncertainty and confusion and answers withheld, adding, "She has wondered whether Jesus ever experienced this wound that I feel." Ultimately, she came to the realization, as she recalled the Bible described, that while Jesus was being crucified, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" That is the anguished cry of someone who does not know the answers. As she wondered whether Jesus questioned how long he might be in the tomb and if he had experienced that torment of uncertainty, the way indefinite pain can feel eternal, she concluded, perhaps he did know this feeling after all. She also acknowledged having moments of deep disappointment with God. "Perhaps this is too dark a message to share on Easter morning, but I have long believed that we miss out on fully celebrating resurrection if we do not acknowledge the feelings of loss, pain, and yes, death," Guthrie said. Double-sided ceasefire. Iran describes deal as humiliating retreat by Trump. President Donald Trump on April 7th agreed to a 2-week ceasefire with Iran, less than 2 hours before his deadline for Tehran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz or face devastating attacks on its civilian infrastructure. Trump's announcement on social media represented an abrupt turnaround from earlier in the day when he issued an extraordinary warning that a whole civilization will die tonight if his demands were not met. Iran said talks between the United States and Iran would begin on April 10th in Islamabad, Pakistan, whose prime minister helped mediate the ceasefire. Iranian state TV claimed Trump had accepted Iran's terms for ending the war, describing it as a humiliating retreat by the U.S. president. Trump said the last-minute deal was subject to Iran's agreement to pause its blockade of oil and gas supplies through the strait, which typically handles about one-fifth of global oil shipments. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, said in a statement that Tehran would stop counterattacks and provide safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz. "This will be a double-sided ceasefire," Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform. "The reason for doing so is that we have already met and exceeded all military objectives and are very far along with a definitive agreement concerning long-term peace with Iran and peace in the Middle East. The war, now in its sixth week, has claimed more than 5,000 lives in nearly a dozen countries, including more than 1,600 civilians in Iran, according to tallies from government sources and human rights groups. Two White House officials confirmed that Israel has also agreed to the two-week ceasefire and to suspend its bombing campaign on Iran. Israeli media reported that the cessation of hostilities would begin once Iran reopened the strait and that Israel expected Iranian attacks to continue in the interim. A few minutes after Trump's announcement, the Israeli military said it identified missiles launched from Iran toward Israel. Trump, who has issued a series of threats in recent weeks only to back away, said progress between the two sides had prompted him to agree to a ceasefire. He said Iran had presented a 10-point proposal that was a workable basis for negotiations and that he expected an agreement to be finalized and consummated during the two-week window. Markets breathed a sigh of relief, with U.S. stock futures rising in the minutes following Trump's message. Oil prices fell sharply, with U.S. crude futures dropping more than 17% to just over $92 a barrel. Trump's announcement capped a whirlwind day that was dominated by his threat to destroy every bridge and power plant in Iran unless Tehran reopened the strait. That unnerved world leaders, rattled global financial and energy markets, and drew widespread condemnation, including criticism from the head of the United Nations and Pope Leo. Some international law experts have said attacking civilian infrastructure indiscriminately could constitute a war crime. The closure of the strait, through which almost a fifth of the world's oil supply typically travels, has sharply increased oil prices, escalating the chances of a global economic downturn or even recession. The U.S. Energy Information Administration earlier on April 7th warned that fuel prices could continue to rise for months even after the strait reopened. With the U.S. midterm election campaign ramping up, Trump's approval ratings have hit their lowest level ever, leaving his Republican Party at risk of losing its grip on Congress. Polls show sizable majorities of Americans opposed to the war and frustrated by the rising costs of gasoline. As the clock ticked down to Trump's 8 p.m. Eastern deadline, U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran intensified, hitting railway and road bridges, an airport and petrochemical plant. U.S. forces attacked targets on Karg Island, home to Iran's main oil export terminal.